always be clear where you get your conservative talk.
The St. Louis Business Journal is now reporting that liberal billionaire George Soros is the largest shareholder of Odyssey,
the parent company of KMOX and 97.1 Talk.
Soros' maneuver raises critical questions about the future of media ownership and influence.
Money and attention is power. And when he has the money and he controls what's on the radio stations, he's going to be able to control the minds, essentially hundreds of millions of Americans.
St. Louis's trusted source and number one.
For conservative talk.
This is News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
And while this defendant may be unlike any other in American history, we arrived at this trial and ultimately today at this verdict in the same manner as every other case that comes through the courtroom doors, by following the facts and the law and doing so without fear or favor.
The fact that Alvin Bragg had to so vociferously expound on that point just proves to me that the opposite was true. Like, why would you have to say that? Like, why would you have to make him? Because he knows that's the criticism against him. And so he doth protest too much. No, you didn't. No, you didn't arrive at this the same way you did. And I'm going to prove that point in just a moment. Welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Arps show. Chris Arps is out on assignment for a few days. I believe he's up in Chi-Town in Chicago learning about electoral integrity, as he should. He'll come back with much knowledge to spread to News Talk STL Nation. Thanks for joining us this afternoon, making us part of your Friday afternoon as we head into what is going to be a pretty decent summer weekend. I'm here. Producer Joey V is here. You're all here. Want to thank all of our... It was Sponsor Appreciation Friday. Just so happened that we were able to book two of our sponsors we've been trying to book on the show, and they were both available on the same day. So we introduced you to the good folks at Sugar Creek Golf Course in our first hour, Dwayne and Christine Eoff, along with Katie Santangelo, who is their marketing manager, director of marketing, and just about everything there at the shop. Sugar Creek is a beautiful place. It's a gorgeous golf course. It's right here in Jefferson County, right down on Highway 30, and it's like 7 minutes away from Johnny's Hideout, and I know where both of these places are. They're both wonderful supporters of the station and of the program. And of course, we had Dr. Pat Fader, my longtime friend, been going to comprehensive chiropractic well over 15 years, probably approaching 20 years at this point. They have so many docs with so much specialty knowledge there. It's holistic healthcare. I went to comprehensive Monday or Tuesday, saw Dr. Caleb Gorman. They have so many great docs there, and I always feel better. I feel better. Everything gets reset and restructured, and I'm feeling great heading into the weekend. You will as well, whether you have a small problem or a bigger problem. Everything about our show and our station, newstalkstl.com. Follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, on YouTube, on Rumble. You can watch us. You can chime in. Joey's able to talk to you all during the show. And I sometimes am as well, especially when Chris is here. And I would love for you to watch us, listen to us on all those platforms. And remember, your telephone that you carry in your hand everywhere you go, I know you all do, is your radio. You download the app. I used it today. I have it synced to all the different speakers in my life. You know, I have a little office in Eureka. I got speakers in there that I link the app to. At home, of course, we have the smart speakers. So your phone is your radio. At 5:25, we're going to talk to one of the dynamic duo that's going to be joining us near the end of the month. Tuesday, June 25th is our big Saving America 2024 live listener program. You can join us live at the Funny Bone in St. Charles at 7 p.m. Doors at 6:30, show at 7. It's going to be fun. It's going to be entertaining. It's going to be exciting. So many of us, if not all of us, hosts, producers, we're all going to be there, and we're going to be featuring Joel Griffith, who's going to be joining us at 5:25, research fellow for economic policy studies at the Heritage Foundation, and our senior legal fellow, Zach Smith. It's going to be a great program indeed. You know, at 5:45 today, I'll do the speaker stump speech here in a moment. I'm going to talk to you about this ridiculous trial that just concluded in New York and how we do not have to accept the verdict, despite what Joe Biden demanded of us. Today, Joe Biden, who has weaponized the legal system more than any president in U.S. history, especially against his top political opponent, who just happens to so be beating him in pretty much every national poll. Think back to 2016. Donald Trump was a late victor in that race. Do you remember that? There was really never a time in any poll where Donald Trump was leading Hillary Clinton. It was a late break, right? Like, we kind of saw it in the last week. We're like, huh, could could he actually pull this off? And then on election night, don't you all remember? It was kind of a shocker, right? Because the media was basically telling us Donald Trump can't win. And they definitely, they put their finger on the scale of 2016, and they absolutely put their finger on the scale of 2020. Look, 2020, you know, I know a lot of people get in trouble when they say, oh, the election was rigged. It was. There was a Time magazine article, Dan Bongino talks about it all the time. There was a Time magazine article talking about all the forces that came together to stop Donald Trump in 2020. And they were successful, right? He's currently not in the White House. So there's a lot of different definitions of rigged election. And I do believe that 2020 was rigged in many different ways. Some of you believe there was problems with the machines, and I think there was too. Some of you believe there was problems with universal mail-in voting with no signature verification. I do too. Some believe that the censorship of the Hunter Biden laptop, all the other stories that were circulating that we weren't allowed to talk about, where we had some of the oldest newspapers in the world, and especially in our country, like the New York Post, weren't able to publish certain details. How can you say that it was not rigged? It absolutely was rigged in many different ways. So if you don't like my argument on the machines, well, then I got the argument on the media suppression and the censorship, the universal mail-in voting. Pennsylvania changed its voting laws on basically the eve of the election. Is that not rigging the election? And this trial was rigged as well. So I'm going to talk about all that in the Speaker's Stump Speech in a second. Joey at 545... We're going to get into the mind of producer, executive producer extraordinaire Joey Vasevich. We're going to talk a little, maybe some culture, some radio, some TV, some movies, some sports, all things that you engage in, right, in your free time, if you have any.
Of course. I watched a documentary last night just in case something were to come up.
Oh.
I watched a documentary about MoviePass. Do you remember that? People were watching movies for $10 a month. It was losing hundreds of millions of dollars every month. It was never going to work. And I hopped on that bandwagon back in 2018. I saw 62 movies for, I don't know, it was like $2 each when the math shook out.
I wonder how they thought that was going to.
It was never going to work. But
ever work, yeah.
It nosedived a lot quicker when these other guys came in and just started having lavish vacations at Coachella and making movies with John Travolta that nobody wanted. It was great to watch it flame out, but I'm still a little nostalgic for it, so I watched the doc last night.
Okay, we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the fact, Joey, that we are post-Memorial Day. We've had some blockbusters come out, and there's more blockbusters coming down the pike that I want to remind people about and kind of get your early thoughts about whether you think they're going to be they're going to be fantastic or flops.
All right, let's get closer to that.
All right, folks, without further ado, let's get into what not necessarily, I agree with everything I'm about to tell you, but this did not come from the mind of Tim Jones, Fox News, The Blaze, Newsmax, you name your center-right leaning source. This came from one CNN.
I'm very consistent. I'm a very stable genius.
It's time for the Speaker's Stump Speech, sponsored by Hanson's Tree Service at hansonstree.com.
Hanson's Tree Service, thank you so much for sponsoring the Speaker's Stump Speech every single day, brought to you by Hanson's. This is brought to you by former federal prosecutor and, listen up, liberals, I know you're listening closely, CNN legal analyst Eli Honig has published in New York Magazine. I can't think of any more liberal things than that right now on a Friday afternoon. New York Magazine, CNN, and Eli Honig. This is what Honig says. This is all a quote. I'll do a little editorializing here like I always do. But I want you to focus on the fact that I agree with all this. I've made many of these points, so I feel completely vindicated. But here's what someone on the center left side of the aisle has said about this trial. The following are undeniable facts. The judge, Juan Merchan, donated money, a tiny amount, but in plain violation of a rule prohibiting New York judges from making political donations of any kind to a pro-Biden, anti-Trump political operation, including funds that the judge earmarked for, quote, resisting the Republican Party and Donald Trump's radical right-wing legacy. Could you imagine if the shoe was on the other foot and someone was investigating, oh, I don't know, Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, and the actual crimes that the Biden crime family has created, has committed over the last several decades, as they've sold out the United States of America and given access to Lord knows how many secrets, and we found out that someone had given to the Trump campaign. Oh my gosh, it'd be top of the fold headline news. So what Eli says is, would folks have been just fine with the judge staying on the case if he had donated a couple bucks to the reelect Donald Trump MAGA forever race? Absolutely not. Second, District Attorney Alvin Bragg he's a Soros-funded prosecutor, by the way. That's a fact. I'm not making hyperbole. Alvin Bragg ran for office in an overwhelmingly Democratic county by touting his Trump-hunting prowess. So this guy ran a political campaign, folks, on getting Donald Trump. How is his prosecution then not a political persecution? Explain that to me. He bizarrely boasted on the campaign trail, "It's a fact. I've sued Trump over 100 times. Third, most importantly, the DA's charges against Trump push the outer boundaries of the law and due process. Folks, this is me talking again. Right there is why you do not have to do what Joe Biden demanded you today and accept this as the judicial process working, and we're all just supposed to move on. Because the charges push the outer boundaries of the law and due process. Those are constitutional issues. And that's not on the jury," as Ellie continues. "That's on the prosecutors who chose to bring the case and the judge who let it play out as it did. The DA's press office and its flacks often proclaim falsification of business record charges are commonplace, as we heard in that quote coming into the segment. And indeed, the office's bread and butter. That's not true. It's only true if you draw definitional lines so broad as to render them completely meaningless. When you impose meaningful search parameters, the actual truth emerges," Honig continues. "The charges against Trump are obscure and nearly entirely unprecedented." Folks, this was a targeted persecution of a Republican president, the leading opponent to the current ruling regime, the authoritarian regime in the White House. No state prosecutor from New York to Nevada or anywhere in between has ever charged federal election laws as a direct or predicate state crime against anyone for anything. None ever in the history of the world. Even putting aside the specifics of election law, the Manhattan DA itself almost never brings any case in which the falsifications of the business records is the only charge. So this case was unprecedented from beginning to end. Standing alone, Honig continues, the falsification charges would have been misdemeanors, as I've told you a million times, under New York law, which pose two problems. First, nobody really cares about a misdemeanor, especially when you're dealing with a presidential candidate. It would have been laughable to bring the first ever charge against a former president for such a trifling offense within the same technical criminal classification as shoplifting a Snapple out of a bodega. The statute of limitations also had expired 5 or 6 years ago. Yeah, statute of limitations on misdemeanors in New York, and in most states, 1 to 2 years. In New York is 2 years. It expired in 2016 to 2017, giving them the ultimate benefit of the doubt 7 years ago. So to inflate the charges from those misdemeanor charges under which the statute of limitations had already run up to the lowest level felony, which was all they could do, a Class E felony, Class A through E, and to electroshock them back to life within the longer felony statute of limitations, which was the only way they were able to bring the case by bootstrapping it in this fashion. The DA alleged that the falsification of business records was committed, quote, with intent to commit another crime. Here, according to prosecutors, the other crime is a New York State election law violation, which in turn incorporates three separate unlawful means. Number one, federal campaign crimes. Number two, tax crimes. Number three, falsification of other documents. Inexcusably, the DA refused to specify what those unlawful means actually were. The judge declined to force them to pony up during the trial until right before closing arguments, which, by the way, are not evidence. They're argument. They're not evidence. So much for the constitutional obligation to provide notice to a defendant, another ground for reversible error, of the accusations against him in advance of trial. In these key aspects, the charges against Trump aren't just unusual, they're bespoke, something crafted individually for the former president and nobody else. We don't do that in the United States of America. We don't have targeted persecutions of individuals just because we want to bring a crime against them. The Manhattan DA's employees reportedly have called this the zombie case because of various legal infirmities, including the bizarre charging mechanism. But it's better characterized as the Frankenstein case, cobbled together with ill-fitting parts into an ugly, awkward, more or less functioning contraption that just might ultimately turn on its creator. Trump will appeal, as is his right, and he's certain to contest the inventive charges constructed by the DA. I won't go so far as to say an appeals court's likely to overturn a conviction. We are in New York, by the way, but he's going to have a decent shot at a reversal.
No man is above the law.
It's become cliche, but it's an important point, and it's worth pausing to reflect on the importance of this core principle. It's also a meaningless pablum if we unquestionably tolerate, or even worse, celebrate, deviations from ordinary processes and principles to get there. The jury's word is indeed sacrosanct, as I learned long ago. But it can't fix everything that preceded it. Here, prosecutors got their man, for now at least, but they also contorted the law in an unprecedented manner in their quest to snare their prey. That's former federal prosecutor, CNN legal analyst, Eli Honig, as published in New York Magazine, with a little bit of editorializing from one speaker, Tim Jones. Folks, there was the lead prosecutor as well. I didn't even get into this. The lead prosecutor, I looked up his name, Matthew Colangelo. Matthew Colangelo was working as the number three man, the third guy from the top, from Merrick Garland, the Department of Justice. And he mysteriously disappeared from the DOJ last year and popped up and resurfaced in Manhattan in a local city DA's office right after Donald Trump announced he was going to run for office. And then here came the indictment. Here came the trial. Here came all of the violations of due process, the constitutional violations, the reversible error in jury instructions. We don't know as we sit here today what felony it was that Donald Trump was convicted on. You know why? Because the jury verdict form doesn't list it. The judge gave a multiple choice offering, which you're not supposed to do. All of it is grounds for reversible error. It's all violative of our U.S. Constitution. Joe Biden and his leftist hacks have made a mockery of our judicial system and made us into the banana republic of America Stan. And that's the speaker's stump speech for today. 5:24 in the heartland. We got to get to a break here because we got Joel Griffith standing by, research fellow for economic policy studies at the Heritage Foundation. I'll let you chew on that and everything I just said, and we'll come right back with our economics expert and talk about Bidenomics, Bidenflation, and everything that voters will have actually on their minds as we head to the ballot box this November. That's straight ahead on the Tim Jones and Chris Harp Show, 101.9/94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
You know, our working age population has been stagnant for a while. Births in the U.S. have been falling persistently and precipitously since 2007, and I don't see any reason to think they're going to turn around. People have had in mind since the 1960s this misguided worry about overpopulation. People have been celebrating declines in birth rates, and now all of a sudden we're starting to realize that that's actually going to be really bad for our fiscal situation and our economic dynamism.
Where did that misguided notion of overpopulation come from? I bet our next guest can help us unpack that and a lot more about the economy and the current state of things in the United States of America and beyond. Joining us next, I have spoken to him many times in the past. I don't know if we've had him on our particular program here in St. Louis yet, but he's an old friend, Joel Griffith, research fellow for economic policy studies at, of course, the Heritage Foundation. He's going to be part of that dynamic duo that joins us here in St. Louis Tuesday, June 25th at the St. Charles Funny Bone, the streets of St. Charles. All tickets, information, newstalkstl.com. Joel, good evening. Thanks for joining us here at News Talk STL.
Hey, good evening. Thanks for having me tonight. I'm very much looking forward to being in St. Louis very soon.
Yeah, we're looking forward to having you here too as well. So, Joel, this problem with we'll get into some more surgical items here, but kind of broad based here. There's a lot of things that affect the economy, Joel, right? There's all the micro stuff that we hear on the news every day and the different data points and all that. But some of the macro stuff, Joel, is this declining U.S. birth rate. And Joel, hasn't the left told us for decades, you know, the folks at the World Economic Forum, that the world's overpopulated and we're going to use all our resources up and, you know, dogs and cats will be sleeping together and it's all going to come to an end? That's all a fallacy, isn't it? And it's a problem that we actually have a declining population problem, don't we?
No, you're so right. It is a fallacy. And the problem that creates poverty in parts of the world is not too many people per se. It's that in far too many places, people don't have enough freedom to actually make the choices that they would do with their own lives and their own money to actually become more productive. And what we're going to be facing here in this country in the coming years thanks in large part to all the entitlement promises that have been made, you're going to see fewer and fewer workers per each person who's retired because we're not replacing ourselves. If you look at the native-born population, the birth rate now in the United States, we're barely replacing ourselves, and in many parts of the country, we are not replacing ourselves. That means an aging population. That means more of a burden on all of us who are working. And I guess this is the dream come true for so many on the left.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Joel, I want to briefly touch on, of course, the huge headline story of the week, of the month, of the year, and that was the result of the Trump trial yesterday. I'll wait and ask your colleague Zach Smith about the legal ramifications. I want to talk to you, Zach, about the economic ramifications. We saw a trial result. I guess it was earlier this year, maybe late last year, the civil jury verdict in that bizarre case, that civil case against Donald Trump for tens of bazillions of dollars. Now they've hit him with a criminal violation for a business records violation. I mean, Joel, is the judicial system in New York convincing people not to do business there? This is not just about one man, right? This is going to have far-reaching consequences, don't you think?
I do. I think this is going to be a big deterrent of businesses flowing to New York, because it's very apparent now that there are prosecutors, district attorneys, and even judges that are willing to allow their political beliefs to actually inform whether or not they prosecute someone for a fictitious or even real crime. In this instance, and I'm sure Zach will have a lot more to say, I don't believe there was a crime committed. But I think this is going to give a lot of particularly conservative investors pause for concern, because you can spend your whole life working hard and then have it all come crashing down on you. And look, former President Trump is a wealthy man, and he'll be able to get the proceeds for his defense. He shouldn't have to do that. But my point is that for a lot of people, if you come under the gun from a rogue prosecutor, like we saw in this instance, well, you might not be able to get those resources. You might be at the peak of your career and not be able to take the time off. So I think there's going to be a lot of folks that are concerned. And, you know, even more importantly than this, there might be business people that'll stay and just keep their beliefs quiet. But that's not what we want as civil society. We want people, whether you're on the right or on the left, we want people to be involved in politics on the state, local, and national level. And when you have a prosecutor, in this instance, someone who appears to be much aligned with the left, use their power to go after somebody from what appears just to be simply because they're of another political party, that is going to chill people from being involved in their communities.
Yeah, couldn't agree with you more. I saw a big headline today that was calling New York the shrinking rotten apple. And the story was about the fact that a famous real estate investor there said, hey, nobody wants to do business anymore in New York City. It's just becoming more and more ridiculous. Speaking to Joel Griffith, research fellow for economic policy studies at the Heritage Foundation, if you want more of this insight and intellect, Joel will be joining us Tuesday, June 25th here in St. Louis. All details, newstalkstl.com. Joel, let's take a step back and let's look at this economy here as we approach June of 2024. I know we're going to be getting a ton of economic data here as we wrap up May and move into the summer months. The Biden administration, Joel, wants to say happy days are here again, because they point to that one stat, that unemployment stat. Joel, that doesn't even begin to tell the full story of the entire economy, does it?
Oh, no, not in the least. And even that stat alone, when it comes to jobs, always keep an eye on, when you hear the unemployment rate, there is a specific definition. So when we hear only 3.5% of the population is unemployed, what does that mean? Well, a person only counts as unemployed if you're not working for work, but you're looking for work. The millions, the tens of millions of individuals who are adults, who are not looking for work and not working, they don't count as unemployed. So what I like to look at as a more accurate measure of employment is the labor force participation rate. That looks at the percentage of adults of working age who are working or looking for work. And guess what? It's only about 3 in 5 working age adults are either employed or looking for employment. That's 2 out of 5 people who are adults are not working. And if you go a little deeper and look at the percentage of the male population, because we have data going on that back even before so many women joined the workforce, those numbers are arguably down to near the Great Depression levels. Now, of course, we don't see the widespread poverty, But that's also because we have a redistribution system that ensures that most people are going to do actually fairly well if they're not working. I don't think this is something to boast about. I think this is a big problem.
Mm-hmm. And Joel, another major indicator that the Biden administration has been struggling with and sort of declared a little bit of that mission accomplished attitude a few months ago until the numbers turned around on them again, of course, is the inflation target. Joel, many stories are out today talking about the fact that prices for goods rose 0.2% over the course of April, which included a 1.2% leap in energy prices, just as folks are getting ready to fire their air conditioners up for the warm summer months, and a service price increase of 0.3%. Joel, the Biden administration has done nothing to get us back to the Fed's target rate. And isn't this all because of their policies over the last 3.5 years that we can now look back on in totality?
Yeah, you're right. You can't really look at any one month, but even the one month, despite the victory lap, is still annualized. It's significantly higher than the so-called Fed target rate. But if you look over the past year, inflation is still running around twice what that supposed target rate is. And, you know, these numbers add up. It compounds. When you have a prolonged period of time like we've seen now for 3 years with inflation rates far higher than what they've been over the last few decades, that erodes our income. And I think we all feel the pinch now. Typical families lost around $5,000 worth of purchasing power over the past few years. And that's a rosy number. If you factor in things like home costs and rising interest rate costs, if you have credit card debt, many families have actually, middle class families have actually seen a $10,000 plus annual decline in real wages. And you are right. The Biden administration is largely responsible for this inflation. But look, you got to put part of the blame on former President Trump and the bipartisan Congress during his time as well, because that's when we saw the initial explosion of government spending and, of course, the printing presses at the Fed that financed all that spending. There was a delayed reaction to the rise in interest rate. I'm sorry, the rise in the inflation rate. That hit when President Biden took office. And, of course, he's made it worse. He hasn't reeled back that spending. He's made matters worse. And on top of that, unlike President Trump, who actually focused on reducing regulations and freeing the energy sector from day one, the Biden administration has done a full frontal assault, not just on the energy sector, but the Federal Trade Commission. That doesn't get enough attention. The FTC has a lot of power to block businesses from expanding and merging. And there's a quasi-Marxist who's in charge of I think in many instances, she's acting like a quasi-Marxist at the FTC, and she's blocking business deals from happening, the left and right departing from common law and statutory law, and that is not just hampering current business deals, it's also deterring future business deals from happening. So I think we're going to bear the consequences of this Biden administration, even if President Trump wins this fall.
Yeah, the Biden administration seems like it's done nothing but wage war on America in many different ways on many of our institutions. Joel, the other thing that's out there that is deceptive, but there must be a reason that people think this way, despite the fact the country is not officially in an official recession. The left leaning media seems shocked and almost like aggravated at the aspect that a slew of polls have come out over the last few weeks whereby a strong majority of Americans believe that we are in a recession. Joel, I know it's hard to get into the heads of tens of millions of Americans, but given the current economic situation, is it reasonable for people to feel that way given the drag of all the things we've mentioned? And if there was a change in administrations, what could they do to try to ease some of this pain?
Yeah, well, there is a big disconnect between what the economic numbers are showing, what people are registering in the polls, both Republicans and Democrats. And that's because we continue to see these GDP numbers. That measures economic growth. We continue to see that these numbers are saying the economy, in real inflation-adjusted terms, is growing. We're producing more. But yet, individuals and families are reporting that their personal economic situations are worsening. Well, we have to go a little deeper on those numbers. When we see total economic output in any given quarter, 60% of that output is consumer spending. So we got to ask, well, how is it that consumer spending continues to increase at greater the rate of inflation in the last few years, even though real wages have declined? And that answer lies in a few things. Consumers are getting these additional dollars to spend by drawing down their savings accounts. It's near all-time savings are all-time lows. We see families increasing credit card debt. Credit card debt hit $1.3 trillion just about a month ago. That's about a $4,000 total per family increase in credit card debt. And the interest cost on the typical family credit card debt is about $1,000 more per year than it was before.
Mm.
So we got credit card debt, draining down savings, and then thirdly, a lot of folks are tapping into the home equity lines of credit in order to spend. So what we've basically done is we have individuals borrowing to spend more. It makes the economy look as if it's growing, and technically it is, but we're doing that by borrowing. And second of all, if you look at the net growth and economic output and compare that to the growth in federal borrowing, you actually see that the federal government is borrowing more dollars than the economy is growing, meaning that we're basically putting all of our growth either on our personal credit cards or on the federal credit card. And this is why, when it comes to these economic growth numbers, unlike any other time, I think, in our nation's history, we are basically paying for that growth via debt. And that's why there's such a disconnect between what the numbers are showing, what people are actually telling pollsters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It makes sense.
And Joel, before I let you go, I do want to ask you about one last thing. You know, the idea of the federal debt always seems to be kind of a vague, amorphous number to Americans, no matter if when it was, you know, only a few million dollars in the quaint old days, or whether it's the 33-ish trillion that it is now. But it is at an extraordinarily high plateau. It's the largest it's ever been. It's a ridiculously high number when compared to our overall GDP and the money that we bring in revenue-wise. Joel, does that number, is it eventually going to mean something to the future stability of our economy? Or is it just something we could just continue to ignore?
I would argue that it has been impacting us, not just the last few years as we've all felt through inflation. It's been actually impacting us now for the better part of 20 years, ever since the Clinton budget surplus has evaporated and we continue to bury ourselves. And that's because every dollar that has to go towards our interest expense and every dollar the government borrows in the private sector, that represents a dollar that could have been invested in productive enterprises. So if you look over the past spill back to the last 60 years, you see the productivity growth, the productivity rate for each labor hour work typically was much higher than it was today. Today it's closer to 2%. In years gone by, it was closer to 4%. And what that means is that we as individuals have seen our incomes grow at a slower clip than it would have grown otherwise if we had more productivity growth. So my basic premise is, if it weren't for all of these dollars that were getting squandered on the interest payments and being gobbled up by the government instead of investing in the economy, our productivity growth rate the last few decades would have been substantially higher, and our standard of living today for a typical middle-class person would have been higher.
Mm-hmm.
Politicians have gotten away with it because only half of people pay income taxes, and we typically think, well, if we're not paying income tax, how does the more interest payments on the debt actually impact us? But even if you're not paying income tax, even if you're part of the half of the public that doesn't pay an income tax, your finances are still being impacted by all of these interest payments. And these interest payments amount to close to $15,000 per family of four every year. And think about that. Even if it's not $15,000 in your pocket, think about if the businesses in your community for your family could have invested $15,000 for each of your neighbors. Imagine the growth that we would have. So we're already being impacted. It's just that right now we actually feel it, because the situation deteriorated so much more rapidly than it did up until a few years ago.
There you go, folks. Economics and economic policy do matter. You can get more of that insight and analysis when Joel and his colleague Zach Smith join us for our Saving America event 2024. The Economy and the Courts, June 25th, courtesy of Newstalk STL and the Heritage Foundation. Tickets, newstalkstl.com. Joel, thank you so much for everything. Folks, you can follow Joel at Joel Griffith on Twitter X. That's Joel Griffith on Twitter X. You can also look him up at heritage.org. Thanks so much, Joel. It's great talking to you again.
Thanks. Look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, you too as well. All right. Wow. Joey, we're about done, my friend. Unbelievable.
Great job, everyone around. Bully.
You know what I just learned, Joey? Today, in 1930, which would make him 94 years old. Do you know who I'm going to mention?
I do not.
Actor, director, Clint Eastwood was born.
Ah, look at that.
He's 94?
Still going at it.
That is amazing. Good, the bad, and the ugly.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to be back with that. We're going to talk a little, some movies, some documentaries, and more with producer Joey V. Prepare you for Larry Connors USA and your weekend. Keep it right here. Lots more of the Tim Jones and Chris Arp Show, 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.
For podcasts, articles, and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.
St. Louis Circuit Attorney Gabe Gore updated the community today on the progress made during his first year in office. Gore said he is still working at rehabbing the office he inherited nearly 1 year ago after the resignation of Kim Gardner. Back then, it was an office in peril with attorneys leaving fast. The office has also prosecuted more than 1,000 more cases in the second half of 2023 than Kim Gardner prosecuted in the same span of 2022.
And welcome back to the Tim Jones and Chris Sarp Show here on a Friday. It is May 31st. Tomorrow's June 1st. Can you believe it? Thanks for joining us at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. I'm glad that Joey had that clip today because I had a story yesterday about the San Francisco mayor, I believe, who after slashing funding for police several years ago has requested record-breaking historic funding for the police. So how about that? We got that story out in San Francisco. We got this story here in St. Louis. How about that? Gabe Gore prosecuting criminals. And you know what? None of them are a former president of the United States. Yeah, actually prosecuting real crime, something they're not doing but should be doing in New York City. It shows that left-wing lunatics are off the rails and their policies don't work. And because their policies don't work, they therefore have to try and attack their political opponents. 5:54, got a few minutes left here. Going to bring in Joey V to talk about a documentary that he saw about something I had forgotten about, Joey. This was the movie pass company.
Yeah, of course.
And what was so movie pass was a shtick where you could pay a subscription fee and then see as many movies as you wanted or something like that?
Yeah, it's the documentary I watched last night, Movie Pass, Movie Crash. It's on the HBO Max app. It's not that great. It's basically just a Wikipedia article, but I love the nostalgia of thinking back to my time in 2018 when I had the Movie Pass card. Mm-hmm. Now, it started way before 2018, and they were slowly losing money on every ticket they sold. There were limits. It was like $40 a month. You can see 4 movies a month. But then they had these new guys come in and they just blew the doors off the thing and they said $10 a month, see as many movies as you want.
Holy smokes.
And people were just using it every day just to maybe catch 30 minutes of Avengers Endgame and then come back again the next day, see another 30 minutes. And they lost money on every single ticket. And I knew that that was part of the plan and I took advantage. I'm part of the reason they went out of business and lost hundreds of millions of dollars every month. But
so you crashed MoviePass.
I was part of it, yes. I saw 62 movies in that year.
No way.
It ended up being about $2 a movie. And it was wonderful how many times I got to go to the theaters. I'd go to all of them. Tivoli, High Point, Ronnie's. I would go all over the city. And then as it slowly crept up and the thing went out of business, MoviePass started putting limitations. Like, oh, you can't see Mission Impossible. You can only see movies at 10 a.m. You get one a day, or the app would just crash randomly. So I could tell the death knell was, you know, about to happen, and I was riding it out to the very end.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. All right, Joey, so we've got a bunch of movies that are just released. Furiosa, the Mad Max saga, actually did pretty well, even though the movie is very different and is a little plotting in parts. Apparently, the critics thought it was a decent enough story. It's out, and there are some more, though, coming down the pike, right? So what's going to come out the rest of the summer that we should keep eyes on?
Well, first I want to say I saw Furiosa. It's fun, but it's not as fun as Fury Road. But the best part was it made me want to go back and watch the second one, Mad Max Road Warrior. And
okay.
That one holds up. It's incredible. It's okay. Action-paced. So just go back and watch the second one if you have time.
There you go. Watch a little Mad Max this weekend.
All the biggest movies of the year. It's sequels, 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 man. That is the name of the game. Bad Boys 4, Twisters 2, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Joker 2. I mean, Inside Out 2. I mean, these are the most anticipated films and, you know, they may save, you know, Hollywood, but it's sad that there's not as many original films that are coming out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if there's one you're looking for. I know Alien Romulus was on
okay,
your
so
list.
Tell me about... So it's called Alien Romulus?
I don't know where it is in the timeline. I'll have to do my homework.
Now, they're borrowing something from Star Trek?
I think it's between 1 and 2. Alien and Aliens is
okay.
What we were seeing the other day. But
right.
I'm sure if it's violent, I'm in for it. I love violent. Rated R movies in space are kind of my thing, no matter how bad they are.
All right, we got to wrap things up, Joey. I wish we had a lot more time. We'll continue this discussion on Monday. In the meantime, we've got Larry Connors USA coming up. He's got a lot of awesome topics this afternoon, including the Trump trial. John Labutier will make me pull my hair out. And the RNC reporting a record haul. Have a great weekend. 101.9 941 News Talk STL.
For podcast articles and more, find us on newstalkstl.com.